I appreciate Emery's words this morning during the communion, talking about covenants. It fits right in with what we're discussing this morning and what we have been discussing this month, this concept of a covenant, this concept of having this relationship with God that that God established, but we have these certain expectations, or God has these certain expectations as to how we are to live out this relationship. And it's really a unique relationship, but it's also one that is very important. And we need to be very mindful. And as we talked about last week, we need to be very purposeful about that relationship so that we can fulfill those expectations. And I don't want to use the term get the best out of, but I guess that kind of is what we're looking for. We want as Christians to get through this relationship, to have the best kind of relationship, but also to be the most pleasing to our God, to be able to serve Him the way He desires us to serve Him. And that requires some commitment. It requires us paying attention to what's going on. And so this morning we're going to continue that idea and continue talking about that. And we began this lesson series by looking at Matthew chapter 5. And I want to look at that verse again. Matthew chapter 5. Jesus says, "For I say to you, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, that you will not enter the kingdom of heaven." And what we said last week is that righteousness, we're using this definition of that word, righteousness. Righteousness is fulfillment of the expectations in any relationship. Whether that relationship is with God or whether that relationship is with people, that righteousness involves fulfillment, right? And we talked about how Jesus fulfilled the law, that all of it was pointing to Jesus, that all of the prophets, that all of the law that we call the Torah, right? The first five books of the Bible, not just the Ten Commandments, but the law was the Torah. It was the teaching. It was the Torah of God that God gifted to Israel and to us so that we can learn and grow and know how to be covenant people of God. And so Jesus says that He fulfills that. He's the fulfillment of all of that. It's all pointing to Him. And to follow Jesus, to be a disciple of Jesus, is to be part of this relationship, this new covenant that Jesus is establishing and bringing us into a closer relationship to God. And I think it's fair to say that everyone, no matter what situation you are in, that you are in some kind of a relationship, right? Whether, even if you're single, you still have some relationships with others. Whether those relationships involve business, you might have a business partner that you're in a type of relationship with, and in regards to business, it could be just friends and family and coworkers, and there are all sorts of different ways that we can think about and talk about relationships. But I would also say that it's fair to say, whether you know this or not, whether you've thought about this or not, and I'm going to say that if you haven't thought about it, you probably should, that regardless of what kind of relationship you are in, there are expectations. There are always expectations. It doesn't matter what's going on. There are always expectations. And if we don't think about that, then we're going to have a problem. Because when expectations are not clearly laid out, when expectations are not clearly laid out in a relationship, or when maybe one or the other, or maybe even both in a party, in a relationship, are not committed to the expectations, there is a breakdown in the relationship. Wouldn't you agree with that? Every time. Every time. If these expectations are not clearly laid out, or if one or both in a party are not committed to these expectations, there is a breakdown in the relationship. And when this happens, it doesn't take very long before things become frustrating, right? They're frustrating. And just think about that. If you have any kind of a relationship with somebody, and in your mind you've got these expectations, and you're thinking, well, that person should do this, and that person should do that, and this is how this is supposed to work, and that's how that is supposed to work, and when those expectations are not being met, guess what? You're frustrated. And that frustration quickly becomes anger. And that anger can manifest itself into hate. And when hate shows up, it really doesn't take long for frustration and anger and hate to become resentment. And you begin to resent people. And you begin to have hatred in your heart and anger for your fellow man because there's a breakdown in that relationship, right? And we kind of understand that, don't we? We see that. We've probably been a part of that before. We all understand how that works. And even further, if you go even further into this idea, you might get so far into anger and hatred and frustration and resentment until it manifests itself into violence. Violence and physical harm. That you want to physically harm somebody because they have not ultimately met your expectations. That frustration has gotten so bad and it has festered so much within you. And I think at times we even forget why we were mad in the first place, don't we? I mean, we just don't know. It's taken so long and it's been working on us for so long that by the time it gets to the point where we become violent towards somebody else, there's a lot of times if you were to ask, well, what led to this? People would say, I don't remember. I don't even know. All I know is I'm mad and I've got hatred and I'm frustrated and physical violence becomes part of that process, doesn't it? And if you've turned on the news recently, you've seen it, haven't you? You've seen it. You've seen it's all around us that people get to that point where they break down and they become angry and they want to physically harm somebody. You know, as I was preparing for this lesson this week, I was reading some articles and watching some videos on the Hatfields and the McCoys. Y'all remember that group of surly fellows up in the Appalachian Mountains? I'm sure you've heard the story before. It's of course been around forever. It's part of American history. But this idea of these two parties, these two families who lived up in the Appalachian Mountains, and they feuded against each other between 1880 and 1890. It was a massive feud between these two families. And the two patriarchs, William Anderson Hatfield and Randolph McCoy, these two patriarchs, they together, or each, had about 13 children. I don't know if you knew that part of the story. I suppose that having 13 children would probably drive anybody over the edge. But these two patriarchs had 13 kids each. They lived up in the mountains, kind of in these rural areas. And nobody really knows how this feud actually began. There's a lot of theories and ideas. I was even watching an interview from modern day Hatfields and McCoys, and they won't even agree on how the feud actually began. But some believe that it stemmed from this residual frustration and hatred that came through the American Civil War, because these were on two different sides of that, on that field. And so some believe it was just residual hate, residual frustration that manifested itself in this way. Some believe, and I think this is a really popular view, is that at some point Randolph McCoy accused a Hatfield of stealing one of his pigs. And ultimately that started the whole thing off and began this massive feud. But I want you to think about this. The story is interesting, but from 1879 to about 1881, mostly this feud involved harsh words and accusations. There were a few altercations from time to time, but that was the thrust of it. Harsh words, accusations, frustration, anger, and hatred. But in 1881, Ellison Hatfield was shot and killed during a fight with the McCoys. And as a way of revenge, the Hatfields kidnap and execute three McCoy brothers. And that's when it really gets dirty, right? That's when it really gets messy. See, that there were a total of 13 deaths between these families during this 10-year feud that these families had. But it all started out, right, with harsh words and accusations and quickly escalated and became murder and revenge, kidnapping, execution. You know, if you were to ask these people if they would ever be willing to do something like that, I think a lot of them would say, well, no, I would never do something like that. But it happened. It happened. And I think a lot of us, when you get to the other side of this and you say, well, would you ever do that? Would you ever harm somebody? They would say, I would never harm somebody. But you see, when we allow our emotions to be unchecked, when we allow ourselves to be hurt and it hardens our heart and it becomes violence, I think it can be kind of surprising. And I think it was surprising to these families. But over time, that became the way of life. And I think this story of the Hatfields and the McCoys is tragic, isn't it? And it's kind of shocking. But I think if you are really, really honest with yourselves, really honest with yourselves, there's a little bit of that attitude in all of us. There's a little bit of that attitude in all of us, right? Because we allow people to get under our skin. We allow situations to bother us. We allow things to fester inside of us, and we have frustration and anger towards our brother, our sister, and our neighbor. And we may not even imagine, right, just doing harm to somebody. I mean, that may not even come to our mind, doing harm to somebody, doing harm to our brother, doing harm to our sister, doing harm to our neighbor. But we have to at least admit and acknowledge that hatred and anger lead to severed relationships, right? Hatred and anger lead to severed relationships. I'm afraid that we would rather embrace, that we would rather embrace hatred and embrace anger over reconciliation. That we would rather embrace hatred and embrace anger over reconciliation. We'd rather just be mad. We'd rather hold a grudge. We would rather play the blame game. We would rather just feud. We would rather seek revenge rather than peace and reconciliation. So I want you to consider this idea this morning. Our relationship to one another, whether it's within these walls or outside in the community or in our homes, our relationship to one another is a reflection of our relationship to our God. Our relationship to one another is a reflection of our relationship to our God. God cares. God cares. God is concerned about our relationships. He's concerned about our relationships to one another. He cares about how we treat our neighbor. God cares about that. Did you know that? He's concerned about that. God cares about how we treat our brother. God cares about how we treat our children, how we treat our parents, how we treat our spouse. God cares about our relationships to one another because our relationship to one another is a reflection of our relationship to God. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 21, Jesus says this. He continues on and he's going to list off these things. And he's going to list off these commands of God that are within the Torah. And he's going to help the Jewish people of his day understand what they actually mean. Right? Because they had some ideas of what these meant. But Jesus is going to come in and say, well, your ideas, your expectation of fulfilling this command is not exactly the way God sees it. And so Jesus is going to come in and help them see the reality of the situation. Verse 21, he says, you've heard that the ancients were told that you shall not commit murder. And whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. So you shall not commit murder. Where does that come from in the Torah? What part of the Torah is that? Anybody know? It's part of the Ten Commandments, right? It's that portion of the Torah that lists off these Ten Commandments. We sometimes consider that to be the law. It wasn't for the Jews. The Jews considered all five of those books as the law, the Torah. But the Ten Commandments are certainly a central focus of it. And so this idea of thou shalt not murder, right? Do not murder. And we know that and we understand that. And then Jesus says in verse 22, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. So, you know, we can think about it this way. A court of law would rightfully convict somebody of murder, right? Whether it's just any old court, even in those days, a court of law that did not abide by the laws of God would still see murder as being something that was worthy of punishment. But in God's government, God's reality, murder was against his nature. It wasn't part of who he is. It is not what his people do. And murder was a sin. It was against God's covenant. They shall not murder. And what Jesus is saying is that, yes, that's true, right? I mean, you shouldn't murder somebody. But it goes beyond that, doesn't it? It goes beyond the violence. It goes beyond the physical act of murder. The court may see you as innocent of murder, right? I mean, you might hate your brother. You might be angry at them. You might be thinking ill things in your mind. You take that to the court of law, what are they going to say? You didn't do anything, right? You didn't do anything. Just because you're angry doesn't mean you're guilty, according to the court of law. And so Jesus is saying, you may not have been found guilty of murder. You may not have actually physically murdered anybody. But I say that if you have anger and you have hatred in your heart for your brother, for your fellow man, then you're guilty. You see how that kind of changes our perspective of things a little bit? Because we like to say things like, you know, I've never murdered anybody. I've never killed anybody. I've never taken anybody's life. But Jesus says, no, no. If you're sitting there and you're stewing and you're angry and you have hatred and you feel like you want to take somebody's life and you're not going to do it, but you feel like you're going to, and you're frustrated, and you allow that person to get under your skin and you allow the situation to control you and your feelings and your emotions are controlling you, you may not physically go over there and take that person's life, but you're guilty. You're guilty of allowing your emotions to be unchecked. You're guilty of not holding on to that which is good and right in the sight of God. You're guilty of breaking the law and the commandments of God. And look what it says. And it says, whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, you empty-headed person, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. You see, if we are going to have the kind of relationship, folks, if we're going to have the kind of relationship with our brother, with each other that God wants, we are going to have to keep the commandment, thou shalt not murder. Right? We're going to have to keep that commandment. That's part of the old covenant. It is part of the new covenant. If we're going to do that, then we're going to have to go beyond the physical violence, the physical act. And we have to go before the violence begins. Before we even get to that point, before it has manifested itself into the murder of somebody and the execution of three brothers, right? Before it gets to that point, we're going to have to check our emotions. We're going to have to say to ourselves, am I justified in my anger towards my brother? Where is this hatred leading me? Is it leading me to a deeper, more meaningful relationship to my God, or is it leading me to a severed relationship with my brother and my God? Where is this going? What's the end game? Where am I taking this? And when do I need to say that's enough? Enough is enough. I'm done. We are going to have to keep this commandment by making sure our attitude towards our brother is going to be good and wholesome. It's going to be what God desires of us. You know, it's interesting that Jesus says this, right? Because those who are accusing Jesus of throwing out the law, Those who are accusing Jesus of putting aside and abolishing the law of Moses, these are the kind of people that would come forward and say, I'm not guilty of murder, but they have hatred in their heart for their brother. I'm never going to take anybody's life, but I hate and I'm angry and I'm frustrated and I hope, I just hope something happens to that person because I am angry and I'm hurt. The same people who would say they have not committed murder have anger in their heart for their brother. In fact, they hated Jesus, didn't they? They hated Jesus. Now, not because he did anything wrong, not because he was a lawbreaker, but because he went against their teachings. He went against their expectations. They hated Jesus. They were angry at Jesus. Jesus made them look bad in front of the people. And they were angry at him. And they put him to death. They murdered him because they hated him. They hated Jesus and put him to death. Like the Hatfields and the McCoys, it started out with thoughts, right? It started out with words. It started out with harsh words and accusations, and it quickly becomes bloodshed, right? The law, do not murder. Do not murder. That's what the law says, and it is true, and it is right, and Jesus is not trying to take that away. But Jesus is presenting a new scenario, isn't he? He's presenting a scenario where the community of God has removed those things that lead to hostility. The community of God has have removed those things that lead to hatred. We've removed those things that lead us to violence. We've taken those things out of our heart, and we've been transformed, and we've been conformed to the likeness of Jesus, and we've removed hate, and we've replaced it with love and mercy and compassion to become like our God through our Savior Jesus. We've removed those things, and Jesus is presenting a scenario where the community has gotten to a point where hatred doesn't even exist within the brotherhood. And guess what else doesn't exist? Murder. Murder. Because nobody just wakes up and just says, you know, I think I'm going to kill somebody today. I mean, this is not how we work. But frustration and anger and hatred lead us to that. It corrupts us and destroys us internally, and we desire revenge and we want to take it ourselves, and that's where it goes. But Jesus imagines a community where that doesn't exist. Look at verse 23. Jesus says, therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there you remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First, be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. So you can kind of imagine, you know, a Jew going through the normal process of offering something to God. And so they're offering their offering at the altar to God, whether it's a sin offering, whether it's a burnt offering, whatever that is. Jesus doesn't really specify. Most likely a burnt offering. But you can imagine them about to offer that offering, and they remember, I have a broken relationship with my brother. That there's something wrong with this relationship. That has been severed. Whether I severed the relationship or whether they severed the relationship is not relevant, is it? The point is there's a severed relationship. And what does Jesus say? He says, stop. Stop right where you are. Leave your altar. You leave your offering at the altar. Just leave it there. Go to your brother. Show mercy. Show love. Show compassion. Seek peace. Seek reconciliation with your brother. And then go back to the altar. Then go back to God. God is concerned with our relationship to him, isn't he? He's concerned about that. God is concerned about our relationship to him. And that's what these offerings are representing, is our relationship to God. But he is also concerned with our relationship to one another. And if our relationship to one another is broken, if it is fractured, if we have hate in our heart and anger towards one another, then our relationship to God is broken and it's fractured. And Jesus says, just stop right there. Just stop. Reconcile with your brother. Make peace. Offer mercy, love, compassion, and then come back and offer your offering at the altar. Verse 25, Jesus says, make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up every last cent. Our relationship to one another is a reflection of our relationship to God. Our relationship to one another is a reflection of our relationship to God. And if we do not prioritize reconciliation, we are not obeying Jesus. Let me say that again. If we are not prioritizing reconciliation, we are not obeying Jesus. But you know, that's hard, isn't it? It's hard. It's easier to stew in my anger and stew in my frustration. It's easier to be mad and to talk about somebody behind their back and say, well, you know, that good for nothing. I don't like that person, and they make me mad and they make me frustrated. It is easier to be there than it is to reconcile that relationship, isn't it? It's easier for me to just say it's their fault, they hurt me, they owe me, than to go to them and say, let's make peace. Let's make peace. But Jesus is saying, in order to keep this command, thou shalt not murder, we have to be people who desire reconciliation with our brother if we desire a relationship with our God. If we do not prioritize things like mercy, things like compassion, things like love for our fellow man, then we are guilty of breaking the law. And it is so easy, isn't it? It is so easy. And it's so easy to simply say, well, I've never murdered anybody, right? I've never broken that law. But still be angry and still have hatred in our heart towards our brother. It's so easy to be in that position. It's easy to deceive ourselves, isn't it? By thinking that we are doing what God wants us to do, when we restrain ourselves from hurting somebody, right? I mean, when we just sit there and we say, oh, I really want to, and I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's so easy to sit in that position and say, man, I'm sure glad I didn't break the law. I'm sure glad I obeyed Jesus. But then Jesus says, no, it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that. It goes deeper into your heart than you can ever imagine. It goes way down deep. Even in history, as we think about Cain and Abel, and we think about the wars and the battles and the hatred and all the things that have happened in this world, and we think it goes deeper than that. It goes deeper than that. It goes beyond that, that we remove hatred and we remove anger from our lives. Folks, we need to allow the words of Jesus to convict us of the hatred that we have in our heart for our fellow man and transform us into people who love our neighbors as ourselves. Isn't that what God desires of us ultimately? To love our neighbors as ourselves, to seek the well-being of our brother, to seek reconciliation over retaliation. To be peacemakers for Jesus. So as we conclude this lesson this morning, I want you just to think about that. I want that to meditate on your mind and your heart. Do you have hate for your brother? Do you have anger in your heart? Do you have frustration? Where does that come from? It doesn't come from God. When we manifest those things in us and we allow them to control us, we are not being controlled by the Spirit, are we? We are being controlled by something else entirely. But when we allow things like love and peace and mercy and forgiveness to control us and be part of us, then we know that we can obey the words of Jesus and come together as a community where hatred is not even an issue, but as we love each other as the brotherhood of Jesus. So as this morning concludes, if you have this concern, if you have a desire to come forward and confess to the congregation of your hatred, and if you just need the prayers of this congregation for encouragement and strength, or maybe you haven't even begun this relationship, maybe you haven't even entered into the community of Jesus through baptism, and that is your desire this morning, is to become part of this community that prioritize reconciliation, that prioritizes love, because that's who we're supposed to be, and you desire to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, please come forward as we stand and as we sing.